You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Earlier this month, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon strongly rebuked Hassan Rouhani for failing to improve human rights since he became president of Iran in August 2013. Mr. Ban said Iran has taken some commendable steps but continues to use arbitrary detentions, executions, flogging, and amputations. And over 200 journalists are in prison, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, and women and minority groups continue to be subject to legal discrimination. Joining us now are two people with extensive knowledge of Iran's human rights record, university student leader Mahdi Arabshahi, who spent several months in prison in 2010 for his part in the protests after the 2009 elections, and Gisu Nia, executive director of the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thank you.
Hello.
Have either of you had a chance to read Ban Ki-moon's report to the United Nations Council?
Yes. in our work, I actually just came back from Geneva, where we were speaking to different governments about Iran's human rights situation in advance of the vote that was that actually just passed last Friday, which mandated that the UN Special Rapporteur on Iran could continue his mandate for an additional year. So while we were in Geneva, we did read the report, and we addressed different points that were addressed in the report with the governments that we met with.
Well, how did the Iranian government respond to the UN report?
The Iranian government responded in different official state media with basically saying that it's a pack of lies and that it was completely inappropriate for Ban Ki-moon to make the assertions that he made in his report.
Mahdi, what were you charged with when you were arrested?
First I want to thank you because of the great opportunity. This is a great opportunity for me to talk about the today Iran's issue and human rights violation in Iran. First I want to talk about my own story. I was a student activist in Iran. I was the president of an important student organization which tries for democracy and human rights. The name is Daftar-e Tahkim Wahdat, which is in English is Office for Consolidating Unity. I was arrested four times because of my peaceful activities, and I was more than 100 days in solitary confinement. And in the last time that I was in solitary confinement, I had a bad condition, and then I had a heart attack. And now I'm a student in SUNY at Albany. And I think we have to do something for my friends, because I have some friends that they are still in prison more than 4 or 5 years because of their activities at university, because of their activities for supporting human rights and democracy and political reforms in Iran.
What were the charges? Were you being held as a political prisoner? Were you ever formally prosecuted?
They sentenced me for 2.5 years imprisonment, but because of my health condition, they didn't send me again to the prison, and they released me from the prison, and then I left the country.
Well, where had you been held? Were you at Evin prison, where Iran has held many political prisoners? Because we recently spoke with the three American hikers who were seized near the Iraqi border with Iran and charged by the government with espionage. They were held at Evin prison and kept in solitary confinement for long periods.
Yes, in Iran nowadays we have more than 800 prisoners of rights or political prisoners. We have some student activists in prison, many journalists, many human rights activists, or some people of ethnic and religion minorities that they are in prison. And I wrote a petition. I wrote a petition in change.org to explain about the situation of my friends and prisoners of rights in Iran, and ask the people to sign this petition.
The three Americans said that even Iranian protesters are often accused of being instruments of the United States. Did they do that with you?
I didn't understand your question. Can you?
The Americans who had been detained were accused of being working for the United States, but they said that even Iranian protesters are often accused of working for the United States.
Oh, yes. Many of Iranian activists, one of the important reasons that they said and sent the people to the prison is that you are, for example, a spy for United States, or maybe you want to advance or improve some values of some Western values or some American values, and this is a common issue in prisons of Iran.
Did you ever fear that you wouldn't be released at all, or that you might be tortured or worse?
Yes, you know, in the last time that I was in prison, I had really bad condition. Many days in solitary confinement, I didn't have access to fresh air, I didn't have access to sunlight, and they beat me during the interrogation, and I think we can call that a torture condition, and this was repeated for some other political prisoners in Iran.
But then they released you because you had a heart attack?
Yes, you know, because when I had heart attack, maybe they thought that this is a dangerous condition for me, and they released me because I was known in Iran as a famous activist, and if I had a problem in prison, maybe it was it was bad for the government.
Gisa, do you think that if Mehdi had not been as well known, that he might still be in prison despite the problems?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that we emphasize in our work is that attention matters. Paying attention, naming names, showing who these individuals are that are being held is very important, because pressure on Iranian authorities does, in fact, work. There's plenty of people who are unknown members of ethnic minorities who are in jail. Nobody knows their name internationally, and we don't get a lot of information on their conditions, but I think it gives a sort of cover for Iranian authorities, particularly in provincial regions, to be able to enact even more brutal sort of treatment without the watchful gaze of the international community.
Well, Iran has one of the highest rates of execution in the world. China has the highest. I think Iran is second. Do we have any reliable numbers? Because as I understand it, some of the executions are kept secret.
So my group, the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center, we actually have an execution tracking chart on the website that we update weekly and biweekly. In 2013, there were 624 executions in total. That is both official state-announced executions and those that we could document that were not announced. And by the way, that's a conservative estimate.
And why do you think they are keeping some of them secret?
Well, I think there's very much a desire to announce some of the executions, particularly those for drug trafficking, because they see that if somebody is executed for drug-related offenses, they think that that will send a strong example to others in the country to not engage in such activity. So they're quite proud to announce those. However, you can get the death penalty for crimes like adultery, for moral offenses, sodomy, muharabeh, which means warring against God. You can get it for apostasy, which basically would mean renouncing Islam. So there's a whole host of offenses for which you can get the death penalty that is not in accordance with international law, and I think they do try to keep that a bit under wraps.
Well, not everyone in Iran is a Muslim. So did they apply the apostasy to Baha'is and to Jews and other minorities, Christians?
Well, if you are born a Christian or if you're born a Jew, you actually do have protections under the Constitution, because those are recognized monotheistic religions in Iran. However, something like the Baha'i faith is very much seen as a heretical religion, not even a religion. They call it a cult. So certainly somebody who is a Baha'i would get the charge of apostasy, would be at risk for having the charge of apostasy attached to them.
My guests are Gisu Nia and Mehdi Arbshahi. We are talking about the current situation of political political protest in Iran. Your organization, you're the executive director of the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center. Would that be analogous to the ACLU in this country, or the the Center for Constitutional Rights?
It would be. We do engage in some types of litigation, but I would say that it's more an effort to build dossiers on what's happening inside the country as it relates to the human rights situation and supply that information to UN agencies, governments, in asylum proceedings, anywhere where they need that sort of foundational data.
So you're building dossiers that could then be applied later if the UN is looking into human rights abuses. Were you aware of Mehdi's case?
Yes, yes. In fact, before I met Mehdi in person and before I had the privilege of being able to work with him on certain projects, I was very familiar with his case, and it was something that we were tracking very closely post-2009.
The Documentation Center lists the United States State Department as a funder. Doesn't that put a bit of a taint on your activities in some people's minds?
I think that, well, the center has been around for more than a decade. I think that early on that was an issue because of the fractious relationship between Iran and the U.S. and the history there. However, what happened in June 2009 with the presidential election, this disputed presidential election, and the protest that followed afterwards was really nothing short of seismic. And everything shifted since then. And you see a lot of groups getting funding from a variety of sources. That's just one of our funders. But and it not being attached to an idea that that is then synonymous with overthrow. We're a completely non-political organization. So,
well, Matthew, what do Iranian leaders think would happen if pro-democracy or human rights activists weren't suppressed?
In Iran nowadays, I want to say that there is a huge public demand for human rights reform, for democracy. I think a protest in 2009 in the streets of Tehran was a message from Iranian new generation to the world that we want to change our situation, but the government suppressed the people, and nowadays some people have some people hope that maybe Rouhani and his administration can change a bit human rights situation in Iran. But unfortunately, I think this is not an important agenda for him. Maybe his top priorities are, for example, economic issues and solving the nuclear program and foreign affairs issues. And I think it's a duty for me, for a human rights activist, to put pressure on him and his administration to change the situation in human rights situation in Iran.
Well, he became president in August. By contrast, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has been in office since 1989. He's the one who really wields the power, doesn't he? Many people expected Khatami to liberalize the Iranian society when he took over as prime minister. Nothing much happened, and then he was succeeded by Ahmadinejad.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very true point, because I think maybe the president in political structure of Iran doesn't have enough power and authority to do many reforms. For example, the main power in Iran is the supreme leader, and for human rights issues, maybe judiciary branch is responsible, which is under supervision of the supreme leader. And also, I know that Rouhani has some encountered some opposing forces, that they are some hardliners in Iran, that they want to block any reforms. But I think the public demand for human rights improvement is very very important, and maybe people and international communities, both of them with each other, can support the human rights.
Now, are those protests coming mostly from students or people in the cities, or is this across the board?
In different times, sometimes we can see a massive protest. For example, in 2009, we have a massive protest in Iran. More than 3 million people was in the streets of Tehran to protest the election fraud and also human rights situation in Iran. But usually students, journalists, and human rights activists are more active in this field.
I'm talking with about human rights in Iran with Mehdi Arabshahi and Gisu Nia, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Gisu Nia, Executive Director of the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center, and also Mehdi Arabshahi, who spent several months in prison in 2010 for his part in the protests after the 2009 elections. He was one of many people who unfortunately have been imprisoned and kept in solitary confinement as part of the Iran's constant crackdown on people who disagree. Well, Mehdi, you're now in the United States. Did you come here immediately after you were released?
I left the country 2 years ago. It was 1 year after I released from the prison.
And how were you able to get out? Because people are often denied that.
Yes, but I don't know. You know, the government in Iran have different behavior. Sometimes they let you to leave the country. Sometimes they didn't let you to leave the country. But they let me, and they gave me my passport, and I could leave the country.
Do you still have family in Iran?
Yes, my family, all of my family are there.
And have you been able to maintain contact with them and your friends?
Because of my activities, because when I left the country, in the United States, I continued my activities. I thought that maybe you are free, but your friends are still in prison and you have to do something for them. And my activities abroad of Iran, because of my activities, I cannot go back to Iran. No. If I go back to Iran, no, I'm pretty sure that they will arrest me again and they send me to the prison. I can talk to my family by phone or by Skype, for example, but I couldn't go back to Iran and see my family in Iran.
And are you able to maintain contact with the activist movement?
Actually, it's important for me to have to be in contact with activists in Iran. I am in contact with some of them, but we have to hide this relation because maybe this could be dangerous for the activists in Iran because the government of Iran, the judiciary branch of Iran, the intelligence ministry of Iran, they tried to find any relations between activists in Iran and activists out of Iran, then maybe they labeled them as a spy of the U.S. or Western countries and sent them to prison.
Now, Gesu, has the Obama administration taken an official position on Iran's human rights record?
Yeah, they have definitely. I mean, Obama was just at a prayer breakfast, I believe, 2 months ago, coming out in support of Saeed Abedini, the jailed Iranian-American pastor who's currently being held in Evin prison. So human rights is definitely on their radar. But one thing that we say is, as these ongoing nuclear negotiations happen and as there's more engagement with the Iranian leadership, we need to keep human rights at an elevated priority.
Well, China, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, all countries the United States supports or has extensive trade with, and they have bad human rights records. Right now, Egypt, we still are maintaining connections to Egypt. And what was it? How many? 500? Some people were just sentenced to death for the murder of one policeman. The United States itself imposes capital punishment. So how does this affect the United States' capacity to respond to Iran's actions?
Well, certainly one of the chief criticisms, I think, of the U.S., of the administration, when they seek to voice on human rights abuses is that they're not consistent when it comes to different country situations. I mean, Saudi Arabia has a horrific record on human rights and very high rate of executions, and in many ways is a much more closed society than Iran. But you don't see that same kind of public statements. However, our work is about Iran. Taiwan. So anything that we can do with the international community and different governments voicing their concern over human rights and making that a priority is important to us.
Well, how much do you think the difference is between the way the United States deals with Saudi Arabia and Iran, both countries that it had good relationships with for a long time and both were suppliers of oil? How much of that has to do directly with the taking of the American hostages after Khomeini came to power?
Obviously, that was a seminal event that really created the large disconnect between Iran and the U.S., and anybody who was following events closely at that time remembers the import of it. And currently, just the other day, it was announced that the U.N. ambassador from Iran, who's based here in New York, will be outgoing and that a new appointment will be made. However, there was some concern or speculation that the new appointment, he actually had a substantial role in the hostage crisis, and that's what's been delaying his appointment. So you still see the effects of what happened decades ago, playing out today.
Mehdi, even before, many decades ago, the United States helped overthrow Mossadegh in 1963. It then supported the Shah, supported Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq War. It shut down Iran Air Flight 655 in 1988. Were those all things that you were taught in school?
I think, for example, in the Cold War era, United States supported some dictatorship in Middle East, and this made a bad perspective or bad image of the United States in the people of the Middle East. Also, nowadays, people of Iran, some of the activists of Iran, are worry about the future policies of the United States. They think maybe if the United States solved the problem of the nuclear program with the Iranian regime and Iranian government, maybe they forgot human rights issues. And this is an important concern of activists and people of in Iran now.
Now, the United States-led sanctions have forced the value of the Iranian rial way down. Inflation and unemployment have soared. What effect has that had on the average Iranian citizen? What effect is that having on your family?
Actually, these sanctions, the economy of Iran nowadays is not in a bad condition, and it has two sources. One of the sources is the sanctions, and one of them is mismanagement of the politicians and of the government of Iran.
Is Ahmadinejad being blamed for that?
Yes, absolutely. He was, many people think that Ahmadinejad and his administration was a reason for bad economy in Iran, and maybe one of the reasons that people vote to Rouhani was that Rouhani, they thought that Rouhani can solve economic problems. I think, yes, sanctions had some effects on the economy of Iran, maybe a good relation with world can solve some problems in Iran.
My guests are Mehdi Arabshahi and Gisu Nia. We're talking about human rights in Iran. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, Rouhani, of course, was one of the candidates who was allowed to run. There were many candidates, not potential candidates, not allowed to run. So shouldn't we assume that he still is, whatever he does, it would still be considered within the acceptable range by the Ayatollah?
In Iran, for example, in presidential election, just some candidates could be approved by the Guardian Council. We have a Guardian Council that they have to approve candidates. Many people in Iran cannot have their desirable candidates. For example, Mousavi and Karoubi, two important political leaders of Green Movement who were leader of Green for who were candidate in 2009 election, nowadays are under home arrest. Rouhani maybe in between eight candidates that we had in presidential election, maybe Rouhani was the candidate that people thought that he is closer to the people and he is maybe he's not very close to the supreme leader. And I think this was an important reason that people vote him.
Okay, so many American leaders are pressing for even harsher international sanctions against Iran. Do you have any idea of what opposition or dissident figures in Iran think about those sanctions?
Yes, I mean, many prominent Iranian intellectuals and activists have come out firmly against economic broad-based sanctions. I do think, of course, we see a split here in the U.S. with Congress calling for harsher sanctions, but the Obama administration very much saying that that is not going to be part of the plan. So,
well, the people of South Africa, many say that the sanctions actually were welcome because they felt it brought down the apartheid government. On the other hand, sanctions in other parts of the world, like Cuba, for example, have not changed the political system. And it is my sense that the political system in Iran isn't going to change. Maybe it will liberalize a bit more or get a little tougher or hardline again, but it's still going to be pretty much what we see today.
Well, the sanctions here, of course, were designed to bring the Iranian leadership to the negotiating table when it comes to the nuclear issue. So now that they are at that table, I do think that pushing for new and harsher sanctions at this point in time is not going to further that particular objective.
Well, given gridlock in Congress and the fact that President Obama is effectively a lame duck, do you think the United States government is capable of effectively supporting the Iranian people?
I think that when we do this work, we are looking more to what the international community can do and what multilateral institutions can do. So one thing that my group has been doing, that Mehdi has been supporting and others that work with us, is really working with UN member states on the different resolutions that are tabled at the UN General Assembly, at the UN Human Rights Council, and that kind of action. In terms of government action, there's a lot of different governments that take strong positions on the Iran human rights issue, and we're just encouraging them to speak up and speak louder. But the U.S. is not, I wouldn't say, is the leader in this effort. It's just one of many.
Well, Matthew, how do you think that the United States and other countries should support Iranian dissidents or democracy advocates?
Yes, I think, I want to say that if governments forget human rights issues in their policies and in their negotiations with the government of Iran or other governments in the Middle East, this would be a great mistake for them, and I want to encourage them to keep the human rights issues in the agenda of negotiations with Iran government. And I also think maybe people of the United States or other countries can help the victims of human rights violation in the world by some small actions. Maybe they can sometimes help the human rights organizations with donation, or maybe they can sign some petitions about the human rights issues. I think these small actions can help the people in the big picture.
Well, American attention has been focused on allegations that Iran is pursuing nuclear weapons, although it's unclear whether that's actually the case. How is the American focus on that nuclear program affected possible negotiation on other issues like human rights?
Yes, I think in the United States, when I said that I'm from Iran, the people it remembers nuclear program. Maybe the media pay a lot of attention to the nuclear program of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and I think nuclear program I also think it's important, but we have some different aspects in Iran. We have some different problems in Iran, and I think the people and the media and the government should pay more attention to the other aspects.
Well, some people argue that cultural differences between the West and other parts of the world make it a mistake to try to apply Western standards and values. How applicable are American or European standards on human rights in Iran?
I think this is very wrong justification. I come from Iran, and I think that human rights are universal and should be honored by a government in all the countries. We cannot say that human rights are just Western values, and these are not applicable in Middle East countries, for example. And I also think the new generation of Iran try for the for human rights, and they want to change their situation. They want to have freedom of expression. They want to have freedom, social freedom, and this is an important priority for them.
I think one important thing to remember is that the human rights movement in Iran is very much an indigenous civil society movement that has roots stemming for over a century. So when we talk about rights, I mean, one typical criticism of the Iranian leadership when they're met with the report of Secretary General Ban Ki-moon or the report of the UN specific expert on Iran, Dr. Ahmed Shahid, is that, no, this is our culture. These are the ways that we operate our society, and so you shouldn't interfere. Well, you know, I would say that the hundreds and thousands of different human rights, civil society, and political activists in Iran would strongly disagree with that. And these are voices from inside the country like Mehdi and others.
Iran also wants the rest of the world to respect it for having one of the oldest and richest cultures of the world, going all the way back to before Islam. Zoroastrianism has played a major role in the way Iranians look at the world, for example. And yet it also then wants to have this other thing, to be allowed to do what it does on a, which seems to me to be a very 21st century kind of approach to dealing with its people.
Well, I think there's a lot of competing impulses inside the country. But, you know, I think Mehdi touched on the fact that, you know, a lot of Iranians and particularly the youth are extremely modern in their views. And what has happened is that there is a government with a lot of aging leadership, people who were very much part of that revolutionary era in 1979 and directly after. And frankly, their views are becoming a bit outdated. And so my hope is really with the youth. I mean, I believe 70% of the country is under the age of 35, so it's extremely youthful population. And with that generational overhaul comes changes in thinking.
Gisu Nia is executive director of the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center. Mehdi Arbshahi spent several months in prison as part of his role as a student leader protesting the 2009 elections. He's now living here in the United States. My great thanks to both of you for being on our show today.
Many thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.